We made this.
Special commentary track this time round, exclusively right now for patrons, talking about the classic season 7 Vince Gilligan written episode X-Cops. And sitting next to me, which is a nice rarity for us, is my good pal and occasional X-Cast contributor, Matt Latham.
Hi.
Is that all you're going to say? Just like, hi.
Hi.
Just, hi. Hi, everyone.
What do you think of this scene? Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Ed Winchester. Hi, yes, Wes. Yes, hello. Hello, people.
Yeah, and it's a commentary track, this one. So what the basics of it is, we're just going to sit here, and watch the episode.
And don't slander anyone.
And don't, yeah, don't slander anyone. Don't. No. No slander.
Yeah.
No libel. Yeah. Nothing that can get us in trouble.
Okay.
People who are listening have listened to a few of the commentaries. We've done Babylon, we've done The Pilot, we've done Jose Chunks from Outer Space. And this was the second one, voted one on a list we did recently in the XCast basement for people, commentary tracks we wanted. And when I said to you, we were recording for something else anyway around my house, and I said, let's do an XCast commentary. And X-Cops was the one you chose to talk about, which I think is a good... It's a good choice. It's a good choice for this one. So yeah, we're going to just get into it. The rules are, and if you've listened to any other podcasts, you'll know this. The rules are simple. Just make sure that you have your episode ready, okay? And we'll do a 3-2-1 countdown. And when I say play, we will be hitting play at the same time. And then off we go. Just keep your sound quite low so you can still hear Mulder and Scully. We're off at the races, basically. Mm-hmm. So, are you ready, Latham? You ready to do this? Your first commentary track?
Yes, of course.
Can you talk in that accent, please?
I'll try. Yes, I'll try.
Try all the way.
Oh, a jolly good show. Yes, we're going to see the X-Copes. Yes. The X-Copes. And the X-Files, Season 7, Episode 12.
Thank you. This is why we don't have him on the podcast very often, everyone. Anyway.
Dave Project.
How long's it been? 2 minutes? You've already mentioned Dave Project.
Yes.
We're not sadly watching Season 7, Episode 12 of The Davey Train, although maybe one day we will. But now we're going to get ready for some X-Cops. So let's do the countdown and then we're off. So 3, 2, 1, play.
The following is a special episode of The X-Files. Viewer discretion is advised.
Thank you. That's nicely American there. That's pretty good.
I had practice.
And then...
Bad cops.
Bad boys. That was very camp, wasn't it?
Yes.
Bad boys. Yeah. I'm like Stephen Eady later.
Yeah.
But no, this is great introduction because already it's got the cops formula.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with cops.
I know roughly of it.
Mainly because it's one of those... American pop culture things, but
yeah,
not too
still
familiar.
Going. I think you know.
I think so. Yeah,
it's been years. I mean, this is nearly 20 years old. Because this was 2000, I think this came out. So it's
another Simpsons parody,
and it was going. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. And that was before this, probably. I mean, Cops has been on for probably 30-odd years now. I imagine it's getting on for that. But it's great. What I like is that it's the same format, and. It sets it up just like a Cops episode. So you've got Mulder and Scully doing all the running around. And it's just really cleverly... Straight away, it's just not like any other X-File.
Yeah. What I love about it as well is that it gives you a different view of Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
So, like, and... I mean, like, if someone said to you, oh, what if they did a found footage episode or, like, a documentary, or Mulder and Scully walked into, like, a fly on the wall thing... What would you think? Mm. And you think, oh, Mulder will probably be really into it and Scully will probably just not be in it. And That's what happens.
But yeah, and the great thing is that it's a complete... He's got a complete lack of self-awareness about the camera, and she's got a massive awareness about the camera.
Yeah.
So when you put the two together, it does play that dynamic in a new, interesting way, which we'll see. But yeah, this is... It's a real format breaker. And it was originally supposed to be... Season 4, it was originally pitched by Vince Gilligan.
Yeah. Now that...
Yeah, we should probably point out at this point that we did start recording this, and then my wife, bless her, rang.
Yeah.
We had to start again.
Yeah.
So we kind of mentioned this like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Chris Carter and Frank Sputnitz who said it was too quote unquote kooky an idea. I know, and that's shocking. Wow. You never knew this, Latham, did you?
No.
It was benched really for 3 years. But then when they got to season 7, which was going to be the final season, you know.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, didn't know that.
You didn't know that, did you? It's supposed to be the final season because Duchovny and Anderson's contracts were up, and they all thought it was it. And they were like, let's just do it. Let's just go for it. And it was a great job they did, really, because, you know, Gilligan's, you can always tell a Vince Gilligan script in many ways, but this is a really unusual version of that. Can you hear that? Can you hear that?
No.
Can you hear that, guys? It's a cat. Next door's cat's meowing.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it needs to have its... Something done with the cat. Not neutered or something. I don't know what it is. It's something. They need to have...
way to talk about the third person taking part in this podcast.
Yeah, so if you hear a meowing cat, guys, then it's next door's cat. It's not my cat. I don't have a cat. Although I am, right, this is an exclusive, right, for everybody.
Oh, okay.
I am hoping later in the year to get a dog, and a female dog, and I have pretty much got the go ahead from my wife to call it Scully. for real.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, if I do get Scully in my life, I'll definitely be posting pictures. But yeah, anyway, Keith, the character here is the woman. He's worried about the claw monster. The traditional sort of Latino woman panicked about, because obviously this is set in like the project, really, isn't it? So it's got a lot of, and that, again, that's something that isn't usual. You know, you don't really get Mulder and Scully go to a kind of location like this in any other X-File, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's probably one of a benefit of the move south to LA.
Yeah, definitely.
You can probably do more stuff like this, because you couldn't recreate this in Vancouver, could you?
No. In to their credit, the things they did manage to recreate in Vancouver were astonishing, you know, in the first 5 seasons. But there would be a level of authenticity you can't quite get, that you do get with this. Oh, here we go. Yeah. He's running away from the...
That's the car now.
But that's it. This is what's great. Look at the direction. It's like, it's really there. It's in the seat of your pants, kind of, you know, shaky camera. It's like, it's almost like they've just strapped a camera on a guy, and it's very cleverly done. This would all have been storyboarded, you know, it would have all been properly, you know, put together, but you don't feel that. You feel like it's really raw footage.
Yeah, and the bleeping out, bleeping out of the swearing as well. And again, like here you've got... When was this aired?
2000, like early 2000.
How far after Blair Witch?
Ah, well, exactly, right. Very, not long. 6 months, maybe. 6 or 7 months.
Oh, actually, while we're here, I mean, it's probably a contractual thing, but I really don't. The only thing I dislike about the episode is the fact that the X-Files title sequence is in it.
I kind of agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. I it's a shame, isn't it? They should have just left it out. I think this day and age they would have actually.
Yeah.
I think they would leave that out now. I don't think they'd feel the need to have that in there just to remind everyone. Oh yeah, you are still watching the X-Files.
Yeah. Actually, again,
I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
I agree.
What I quite like is that because of the camera as well, is that you can't see. You can't see the the dog or slash wolf or whatever it was. I can't actually remember it, Mum. So I'd be
It's the fear. The idea of the whole episode is that there is
It's the fear.
It's fear,
it? Yeah.
and it's this sort of incarnation of fear that's causing these people to see different things. So this Latino woman and what Keith thinks he saw was maybe like you know, a claw monster, or he thinks it's gangbangers. She thinks it's like a claw monster. Somebody else then is reporting a werewolf, you know, that kind of thing. Or Mulder starts to think it might be a werewolf, or thinks he might think it might be a werewolf.
Yeah, okay, it's coming back to me now. So that's why their stories aren't straight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it takes about half the episode for Mulder to really latch onto what it is. But and that's why the first half of the episode is them running around. What you think they might be looking for is a werewolf, or then you think they might be looking for... And then you get... Well, you'll see in a bit, you know, you get the whole Freddy Krueger drawing. And that's the point. Blair Witch is spot on, and it's a definite inspiration. I think they even talked about this, in that they wanted to sort of recapture that, the idea that you don't see the monster, and that in itself is a bit rare for the X-Files, because much as it was a show that did try and in a lot of episodes. Look at this.
Here we go.
It's a great way to introduce them, just like
investigating a case. Check the ID.
But yeah, it is a great idea to actually have an episode where you don't see any monster. There is no confrontation with anything. Special Agent Fox Mulder. Special Agent Dana Scully.
Sorry.
It's a great reaction. Isn't it? She's like, what? What's this?
Yeah. So, yeah, immediately you just get like a very odd discomfort from Scully about that. Mulder's just pretty much just
he just goes with it, didn't he? He's just gone with it. I mean, this scene underscores what you were saying earlier about the two viewpoints, aren't it? Because Mulder just goes head first now into, oh, well, it was probably a werewolf. You know, and that's it. It's like, what, he wouldn't be any different. That's the beauty of it. Because this is what he does every week.
Scully.
Hide behind the screen. Yeah. Hide behind the door.
Yeah. But again, like, it's... Again, I think, particularly with the comedy episodes or comedic elements, Gillian Anderson really, really likes them. I mean, like, you can tell she seems to step up, particularly with the Darren Morgan script. She seems to be having a whale of a time.
Yeah.
And again, she seemed... But like, there's always a bit with Scully where they kind of, you know, she's playing comedian, comedically. Where here it's kind of like, I think she does well in that she's actually playing it very straight in terms of her.
Oh yeah, it's really deadpan. Yeah, yeah.
But that's what makes it funnier. Whereas
definitely,
like,
it's that whole thing of she, you know, she's very, it's that whole awareness, you know, she's playing it of Scully, very aware that this is an unusual situation, that they're on camera, and that everything Mulder normally says is fine in the context of her, but when he's saying it on TV, that's why she's like, my partner and I, no, nothing to do with me, I'm not here. He does sound like a raving lunatic. And this episode actually does, look at this, werewolf lore talks about, like, I mean, this guy's a normal cop. The woman there who's like, what the? They're normal cops, you know, and that's the whole thing. This would be crazy to them. What the bleep are you talking about? This is normal, you know. They would be like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, can I just have a word? Yeah. Greatest line of the episode coming up now. I don't think it's live television, Scully. She just said... That is the best line of this episode, I think. Absolute gold. But this is it. She's trying to make the point here that, you know, this is different. And that's the thing. He likes the idea of the cameras because it could actually show what he's trying to prove.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. You know,
it's a body language as well. It's very like natural, particularly with like, just grabbing his arm and stuff.
Trying to get him away from the camera.
Yeah, she's like purposely trying not to put her face into front of it as well.
What career? This is a great line as well. I don't want me looking foolish, Mulder. And that's it. That's what it comes down to a little bit. Scully's a little bit aware that. There's a little bit of embarrassment about it all,
which
doesn't always come out really. She's always obviously sceptical, but there is still that element of people are going to think I'm crazy because I go along with this. And she doesn't want that, you know. but yeah, it's just very well. It's all very well set up here. You've set the stage very well already, with all the particular characters, Mulder and Scully's viewpoints about the camera. And I think it just rolls from there. Really, see, yeah, she's talking about Claw Monster.
Yeah, again, it's like it's setting up the kind of different descriptions.
Yeah.
Of what exactly they're seeing. There's not really a common thread, apart from perhaps there's lots of claws on it.
Mm.
But then you've got.
But that's not always the case either. It's the monster of the episode kind of becomes whatever they're afraid of. So it's more that it's a concept that it's funny because there's an episode of see that's it. That's what the guy who died that was the case Mulder was originally looking at, which was the guy who died of this fear thought it was a werewolf. So he's coming here expecting to find a werewolf.
Yeah.
But the idea of the monster is that it's almost like a fear based. Power, exactly. Freddie. I was gonna say Freddie Mercury. Then that's not Freddie Mercury. That's Freddie. That's Freddie a whole
Mercury.
Different. Thing.
Freddie Mercury got attacked by Freddie Mercury.
But you see, he's puzzled now. He doesn't get it because he fully expected her to draw a werewolf and match up with the other one he's got. But to draw a fictional character, it sort of draws that meta aspect out of it as well, really. That it's Freddy Krueger, you know, a famous movie monster.
Yeah.
Well, things like this is not great. Look at his face here when she says, "You catch it, catch it." He's like,
"Catch him."
Look at his face. Look. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do quite like, because I think you've mentioned this on the podcast quite a few times, in that Mulder's got a very deductive mind, like a very deductive, like Sherlock Holmes-esque.
Yeah, yeah.
Way of thinking about things. Yeah. Very similar to like characters like Gregory House. And like you can kind of see it in here as well. Like he's the hamster wheel in his brain. He's trying to conduct all these things together. Because he does do that on quite a lot of occasions where he thinks, and he is pretty much mostly on the ball 95%.
The thing is, and this is something that has always been a big point of contention with the show. If Mulder was wrong, then the show. If Mulder was often wrong, this is another underlying thing, by the way. The FBI has nothing to hide. Right. Yeah. It's that whole. We're transparent, you know. We're not. There's nothing wrong because you know. There's always the suspicions of the G-Men.
One of my favorite bits of the show coming.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. But yeah, the whole point is that if he was wrong all the time, then you wouldn't have as entertaining the show, would you? I mean, it would be a very different kind of thing. And I think originally, Chris Carter had toyed with the idea of having it be much more of an even split. But then as it goes on, like, what's going to make the most exciting climax of an episode? That they're investigating a werewolf, and it turns out to be a man.
Mm.
Oh, no, actually, it turns out to be a big monster. So even though Mulder is right all the time to validate him, I think you wouldn't quite have a show if he wasn't.
Yeah, I think I remember saying this. I think I've said this on the podcast before, and I think that it does I think it does kind of hurt Scully as a character at times.
It can do, yeah.
I mean, particularly in the first season, where like they're trying to.
I like that though. That the cops thing is overlaid the ad break.
I'm not. I mean, it's. I don't know whether it was right to shoot to the font, but you know where the font on the HD versions is not the X-Files font.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. Mm.
It just looks weird, doesn't it?
It does look a bit strange. But no, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying about Scully. It is one of those things that can sometimes damage a character. You know, it is occasionally, you know, and that's why it's nice, because you do get the odd episode where that is inverted. You do get the odd episode where either she's the believer, and usually episodes about religion, those are the ones, or Mulder's not quite right about it, and see, they do happen sometimes, but they are fewer and further between, really. But this episode, what's great about this is it is the classic pure template of him following leads, her trying to provide scientific answers, and then. But the great thing, the great added aspect to this is the camera, and that makes the fourth wall breaking aspect of this, the meta aspect that they know they're being filmed, even though. we're watching them watching themselves being filmed is great, because it adds another layer, another dimension to the performances. This was supposed to be, well, not this episode, but do you know about the other format breaker that Vince Gilligan wanted to do?
No, I forget that.
Do you remember Unsolved Mysteries? Do you ever remember that TV show?
No, the name's familiar, but I don't know what the format is. So.
Well, it was a... Oh, I love these two, Steve and Edie. They'll come back to these later, because there's an interesting question as to whether or not these two are good examples of gay couples being portrayed, or a bad example. I've got a viewpoint on that. I'll come back to these two. Mm-hmm. But no, Unsolved Mysteries was a terrifying show that was on in like the 80s and 90s, hosted by Robert Stack, who was in Airplane, randomly. And it was he would host and he would talk and introduce stories that were based on real life crimes or mysteries or weirdness in America. And it would reconstruct them. So mm-hmm. you would either have people who had disappeared, or you'd have people who were murdered and the killer got away with it. And it was really scary. It was terrifyingly done. And what Vince Gilligan wanted to do was to make an Unsolved Mysteries episode with Robert Stack, exactly the same as it used to be, but have Mulder and Scully played by reconstruction actors. Not actually have David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson in it.
Okay.
Have the characters in it, but they're being reconstructed, so they're actually on a case, but you're seeing the reconstruction of that case.
Oh, wow. That sounded like it'd been brilliant.
It would have been amazing, yeah. But sadly, it just never, for various different reasons, it never happened, really.
Because they probably could have got stunt casting for that if he's later on, couldn't
they? Oh, they could have done, yeah. And in the end, a lot of his ideas were channeled into Bad Blood, which is no bad thing, really. But, bless him. He's funny. But yeah, that's it. That's a sad format breaker we'll never get to see, really. This is a good scene, because Mulder's...
He's basically now turned into a...
Well, he's trying to explain, he's trying to do his normal thing in the car with Scully, where he'd go, oh, well, you know, this is like this, or this is this, but he's trying to explain it to the camera. Yeah. And Scully's there going... Mm.
Yeah, I love the fact he just seems to go, he just goes with it.
Yeah.
So do you think, at the two of them, do you think Mulder actually watched Cops?
Probably. He's the more likely one, I think, to have watched it.
He's definitely an Unsolved Mysteries there.
I think so. Yeah. Well, when he's not watching porn, anyway. it's either porn or, you know, as he says in another episode, he's watched Plan 9 from Outer Space something like 42 times, like the terrible Ed Wood film. So when he's not watching old science fiction B-movies or porn, yeah, he's probably watching Cops. But it's just a really good... He's more comfortable with the camera, Mulder, than Scully, by far. But... And his Shantara... What's cool about this as well is that, even though obviously this is an actress, because she's a... well, in this case, she's a prostitute, I think... They've made her face. They've not, like they would in an actual Cops episode. I don't know what the term is. They've sort of dulled her, you know, her face, so you can't ID her. Which again, and that's an actress. You know, it's not a real person, but it's just a nice little touch to add to that authenticity of the whole thing. Really, they had an actual cameraman who worked for Cops, a guy called Bertram Van Munster. Who shot scenes around the actual direction by Michael Watkins. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
To actually give it that authenticity as well. Yeah. Which you can see, you know, in the setting and the visuals. Even if you're not a big fan. Even if you're not... I mean, we don't know Cops massively well, but we know of it enough to know, you know, to know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... But what I quite like as well is that, have you noticed that Mulder seems to like kind of try and block the camera
from her? Because he wants her to be honest.
Yeah.
And he's worried that, she's going to, she's not going to want to say things in front of a camera, which makes sense. Which is ironic, because he's perfectly happy to just spout all his madness on camera. But also, this is quite telling of his character, in that the moment she talks about how she's scared of her ex-boyfriend, Chuko, he loses complete interest. Like, he was hoping she'd say claw monster, evil spirit, or whatever. Look, yeah. He's gone. He's not bothered. He's like, this is below us. I'm not here for this.
Yeah.
He'd be quite callous. At first, he's like, well, you know, you can tell me anything. And then, oh, it was my boyfriend. Yeah, see you later.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Even though she does, and this is the thing, she, everything that they're afraid of gets them. So the sketch artist was afraid of, freaked out by drawing Freddy Krueger, and then he was killed by Freddy Krueger. In his mind, he saw Freddy Krueger kill him. And this is what happens there. She's terrified of getting her head twisted off like a chicken, and then, in a minute...
Don't spoil the episode for people.
Sorry.
There could be people listening to this who,
spoilers.
Haven't, watched it, who haven't watched it before.
Yeah. Yeah. All the people who are listening to this, all the patrons have never seen this before.
Yeah. That would be a very interesting... What's the word I'm looking for? Challenge, just to like join a patron and listen to podcast commentaries on a TV show you've never watched. Yeah.
Maybe if, when we get the Davy Train podcast up, you know, that'll...
Rolling Stone put it as its third best TV show of all time.
Of course it did. Sorry, yeah. I should
behind
know that,
The really. Wire and Breaking Bad.
Look at the direction here, though. It's great. It's got that whole sort of proper downtown aesthetic. You know, just the way that it's all a bit hazy in the air.
Yeah.
It's all just street level. It's very sort of cinema verite, this. It's really sort of, you know, ground level, shaky cam. Shot in a few takes as well.
One of my favourite shows of all time, Friday Night Lights, was pretty much filmed with, it wasn't the one camera, because I'm assuming this is just going to be one camera, but like a documentary type style. But they had the mindset that on like a normal blocking of a TV series, the camera moves around. No, the actors move around where the cameras are and have to block on certain stages.
Mm.
But with like the Friday Night Lights and this as well, what you've got is pretty much the camera move. Like the actors are free to do what they want. The camera has to follow around.
Has
to follow them around, and so it's pretty much the actors are kind of directing themselves around the
scene.
There's
less blocking in a way. There's less intentional blocking, probably.
Yeah, and that gives a more natural feel to the episodes.
Yeah.
For example, he said it just gives, and as actors, it must be a lot more freeing just to be able to kind of improvise what you've got to do. They're stuck into a script. Perhaps Friday Night Lights, there was a lot of flexibility to kind of the dialogue, but
I think it's a mix with this. I mean, Gillian Anderson said that they were able to do it in very short takes, as opposed to normally they'd have to do multiple takes, maybe different camera angles. They filmed this much quicker, and I think it's one of those things where you have a freedom in certain ways to do that. Yet at the same time, I think it is definitely more scripted than you might think.
Yeah.
It's more specifically set up than you might
think. The direction might be more flexible.
Yeah, but I think they've got to stick to Gilligan's story, because the story, actually, there is a proper story to this. It's not, in a normal Cops episode, it would be probably a little bit more random and all over the place in terms of, you know, the actual edit and the way it's all put together, because that's real life. But in this, there is a definite arc. You know, you have this monster.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by the end, Mulder has figured out that it's this fear thing. And that wouldn't probably happen in a normal Cops episode. That's the difference, you see. Gilligan didn't... Oh, look at that, that's a great shot with the moon and the helicopter. Mm. Gilligan didn't want that logo on at all, by the way, either. He wanted this to be a complete Cops. He said, I wanted it to be a Cops that just happened to have Mulder and Scully in it.
Yeah.
So he was disappointed that they would put that logo up, or they would put the credits on. Because
I think as well, is that I think probably at the time, is that people watching it will probably think they're watching Cops.
Mm.
I'll probably have to reassure people that they're watching the X-Files.
He didn't want that. He wanted people to not necessarily have that distinction, and for people to go, God, is that real or not? I think, and that's the whole Blair Witch thing coming back again. It's the whole, you know, at the time Blair Witch came out, people didn't know for a while if it was real or not, and there was a real question as to what was going on. So I think, I get why they didn't go down that route, but at the same time, it's a bit of a shame, because it just adds to the slight meta aspect to this whole episode, you know, the knowingness of it all. The Wasp Man. The Wasp Man.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
But this is it. A lot of it's about folk legends and, you know, urban legends and people being scared of movie monsters. And that's really interesting. It sort of plays into a lot of the things that Vince Gilligan always has in his scripts. You know, if you think about how, I mean, look at Breaking Bad. That's all about an urban legend, isn't it?
Yeah.
Heisenberg is an urban legend, you know. It's amazing, actually. I've just watched Breaking Bad, as you know. I've just finished it, finally. And it's amazing when you look back at Vince Gilligan's scripts, how almost all of them have some genesis of Breaking Bad. If you went back and watched them, you'd see so many things in there that thematically
or stylistic choices.
Exactly.
He's got, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Here, you've got like the urban legend idea, you've got the cops, you've got the ground level sort of agents. I mean, the biggest inspiration is Drive, obviously, because that's got Bryan Cranston in it. But
so
there's lots of things.
Is this the first Vince Gilligan episode you've watched since you've watched Breaking Bad?
I think so. I keep meaning to, you know, he's figuring out fear now. He's figuring out that it's an entity itself. I keep meaning to get my wife to watch, because she hasn't watched all the X-Files, but I keep meaning to get her to watch Drive with me, because I keep saying to her, this is the one that made him cast Bryan Cranston.
The dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was the episode. Without Drive, he wouldn't have Breaking Bad. But no, this is the first one I think I've watched.
So, after watching Breaking Bad, do you think that's reassessed how your viewpoint of some of Vince Gilligan's episodes?
Mm.
And his standing in comparison to other writers on...
Definitely.
Because I think, my personal opinion is that I think he's perhaps one of the strongest, if not the strongest writer that was on The X-Files.
Yeah.
I
think so.
I think a lot of his episodes are hits.
There's not many.
I can't think of any real duds that you would...
The only one that I probably think is a bit wonky is Sunshine Days, which is right at the very end, right before the truth.
I haven't seen
season 9 yet, you lucky sod. But like, when you do, you'll see Sunshine Days is a really, really weird piece of TV. But it could be one that I reappreciate now, in hindsight. He is one of the best. I think he's up there with... Look at these two. He's up there with Darren Morgan. He's up there with Morgan and Wong. And Chris Carter at his best, because Chris Carter is one of the best. When he's having a good day. But no, Gilligan. It's Pusher. I mean, I love Pusher anyway.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Never.
Really?
Well, you've kept that quiet.
I know. I haven't said much about it.
That's another exclusive. Scully the dog and Pusher is his favourite episode.
But yeah.
It's only taking you how long? Since
I know. Yeah. But yeah, Pusher's the big.
Yeah.
The big one. But these two are great, though. I mean, what do you think? I mean, these two, obviously, they're very outwardly gay couple. I mean, and they're very camp and very expressionistic, but they're sort of like the keystone to this episode, because they're not scared. They're the only two who aren't scared, which is why they don't die. The only thing they're scared of is their own relationship, and they're caught up in their own stuff. And the reason that they don't get killed is because they're not afraid of something. So the fear doesn't affect them. What do you think about them, though, as a gay representation, especially like nearly 20 years ago?
I mean, whenever like the term of representation comes up in like fiction and stuff, I always find it hard to discuss.
I love how he finds it funny though. Sorry,
I find it quite hard to.
Pictures amazing.
I find it quite hard to discuss that, because it's not a representation of me, so I don't feel I've got the right to.
That's interesting, though. Do you not feel like you have an opinion on it, though? Because I don't think you have to be... You don't have to be gay to have an opinion on whether something is, you know, is good or not, I don't think. I mean, I'm not gay, but I would say that these two are, like, they're quite openly... Well, she particularly is quite openly camp, Edie. But, like, you know, they fit the sort of gender roles. He's the more masculine one, she's the more feminine one. But I think... They're a sweet couple, you know, and I think it doesn't matter in terms of their race, in terms of the gay aspect has nothing to do with the plot, which I really like. It's not about the fact they're gay; it's just a happenstance. They could have been a heterosexual couple, And I suppose that was what I was getting at. I suppose, is it, does it matter that they, and but is the, why did they throw it in there?
I don't know. I think mainly because there's an element of comedy in it. Do you think that perhaps they delved into the like campness a bit too much, which is what
maybe.
You've got the gay couple in here, but again, the, I don't want to say stereotypical, but it's the very camp.
It is over the top a bit. Yeah, it is.
Don't feel qualified to see whether it's qualified enough to see whether it's representative or not is whether the fact that they're overly not flamboyant, but what's the word?
I get what you mean.
Because if they're out and proud, and as you said, they don't have any fear, which is why they survive.
I love that look. Sorry, well, Grace is like, you call me, yeah. Don't talk to me.
because they've got no fear, they're pretty much out and proud. That's actually part of the plot.
Mm.
That's part of the plot, and as you said, they're not afraid to be themselves.
Yeah,
but again, it does seem to step in, like if they've had to have gay characters in the X-Files, they've gone down that overly camp route. But have they done that to show that they've got two characters that?
Mm.
I mean,
I know what you mean. It does make you wonder. It's. You know, representation of minorities was never something they were particularly very good at, you know, in the X-Files. I mean, especially like racial minorities.
Yeah.
You know, you only have to look at a lot of the Native American stuff and things like that to see how much they were very, very unsubtle and, you know, dodgy with that. But they did very little with homosexuality in this. There was very little representation of that.
Yeah.
I think you got a little bit more of that in the Revival series, but like, yeah, it was just interesting. I just thought it was an interesting choice to just have two gay black men characters and it not really be about their sexuality, which is great in a way. I really like that. It's just thrown in there.
Yeah.
But
say, I think that fact where, like, if they're just, they're who they are, then when you mention about the fact that they have no fear, they've probably...
Tell me about it. Yeah, they've probably
had, like, a bit more, because they're out and they're not afraid to be who they are. That's probably why they've got lack of fear of anything, because they've done all the all that
exactly.
I love this scene. This is a good scene, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like taking the mick out of the autopsy scenes that she always keeps doing.
It is a little bit. There's an element. I mean, the best one of that is again a Vince Gilligan episode, Bad Blood. That's the best spoof of the autopsy. But yeah, this is great because she's been filmed.
And she's like not very. She's not. She's nervous, but not as well. If you're
who, Scully?
Yeah,
I think it's more that she's just constantly on edge in this. She's constantly sort of irritated, on edge, aware that they've got to represent themselves in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, and she's always a bit like that. She's always a bit restrained and she's always got one eye on the professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
But like at the same time with a camera in her face, she's massively uncomfortable and she also knows that things can be misconstrued.
Yes. I mean, she's kind of rushed. She's just done.
She's terrified. And that's the thing. It's that this is a good way of showing that fear aspect to the whole story, really. Scully's exasperation is great. There we go. It's her face. It's that reaction. It's brilliant.
I love that. That's a great.
She's so good at this, Gillian Anderson, isn't she? She's so good at this kind of comedy.
Have you watched Sex Education yet?
I have.
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, she's got a very similar sense of humour that I think Patrick Stewart has.
Yeah, well, potentially.
In terms of like, they,
Hantavirus.
Yeah, that where they're not afraid to kind of go there for humour.
No. Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Patrick Stewart. I mean, if you like, if you ever seen him in Extras, where he just basically puts himself there as a massive perv, if you've ever watched Blunt Talk,
Blunt Talk, which is
the first episode, the first like. 15 minutes of that is absolutely ridiculously hilarious.
But they're not people who would necessarily be immediate comic actors, and that's the thing. You know, obviously Stewart was Picard for years on Star Trek, and that was not a comedy role at all.
Yeah.
And Scully's not a comedy role, but she's so good at it, and they understand how to play Scully for comedy in a really good way.
Yeah.
I mean, Darren Morgan was always the best at that.
I said earlier that
you did say that.
Gillian Anderson probably just said that written by Darren Morgan and probably just went.
Yeah, I think she probably did.
Yeah, probably Mulder versus the Were Monster was probably one of the reasons she came back, because she thought that Darren Morgan was coming back.
Could have been. So
yeah.
And to be fair, Gilligan is probably the guy who was able to do the closest to that level of comedy ability. He doesn't write comedy in the same way, but he's. And this isn't strictly a comedy. That's the thing. This is, in theory, this is quite a scary episode, because it's about an unseen creature that is killing people on the streets of downtown LA. He's figuring it out now that Steve and Edie weren't mortal fear. It's a great idea. It's a really simple idea, and also it's a really easy one to film, because you don't have to show anything.
Yeah,
and it's all in the mind. It's weird, in fact, that they didn't do this earlier. They didn't come up with this idea before, and that they didn't do an episode.
Again, and I think this issue, where he's saying there, why here, and he's talking about where people are living behind barred windows.
Yeah.
It's a community based on fear for absolutely their lives and stuff.
Yeah, there's a real level of social commentary to this as well, which fits, it's where that would go. There's a similar idea that, have you seen season 8? You've seen season 8, right? You might not remember the episode, because you're not as conversant as I am, but there's an episode called Empedocles, which is late on in the season, which is when Mulder's back, basically, and it's about evil, sort of trans. And you see, people pull their face skin off, and there's, fire underneath. And
I can't remember.
It's you probably wouldn't. It's not the most memorable episode, but it's about a strain of evil. And it comes back in season 9, although I won't quite explore that for you, because there's part of a development for Doggett's character. But it's sort of it's a similar idea about a force of nature, as opposed to a specific, oh, that's a werewolf, that's a flute man, that's a, you know what I mean? Like when they did the Monster of the Week. This isn't a traditional Monster of the Week, even though it is that formula. It's all inverted, it's all subverted, it's all given that sort of extra distance to it. And it's just so cleverly done. I mean, it's deceptively difficult to pull this off, I think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't think you would be able, a lot of shows would be able to get away with this and make this work as well as this does, which is remarkable, really, given the kind of subject matter The X-Files is. Well, there we go. It's very Blair Witch, though. It's all about what's in the corner of your eye, the camera. Is there something there? Is there not something there? Were you a fan of that film? Because this is a very much inspired by that.
I think I watched it years after it aired and stuff, and I like the idea of it, but I'm not really a horror person.
No, you're not, are you? No.
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 It's kind of weird, considering I've been watching The X-Files, but I think that's more procedural cop drama mixed with the supernatural.
Yeah, it's a different thing, isn't it, really? There are scary episodes of The X-Files, but it's a different kind of fear. It's a different kind of scare.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You can definitely see the stylistic influences, on this, really. Yes. Was that a yawn, Latham? We've only been watching 40 minutes. You're not bored of X-Cops?
No.
No, he's not. He's tired. We have recorded another podcast for this, so he's...
I've been up since about 5:30 this
morning, so... just watching The X-Files, I guess, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. That's all you do.
Yeah.
Here we go. We're about to reach the climactic beat of the episode.
Loud pounding in brackets.
Yeah. This is it. It's all about noises as well. There's a lot of good sound design in this, because it's all about what you... That's a great... That could be... That shot there could be an iconic X-Files shot. Just dark area, bang from... Flashlights. It's almost a bit like you're in the middle of a Most Haunted episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
She could be Yvette Fielding Another only British listeners are going to get that reference.
Oh man, if that means that Mull's going to be Derek Cora, then you can sod that right off.
Scully, I'm picking up a noise, Scully. Brilliant.
Actually saying that Mulder and Scully crap.
I love that. I hate you guys. Sorry. It's been building all episode, just an utter disdain for the cameramen.
But I like the fact that they actually started putting the other cameramen involved into it as well.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think the fact that it's quite nice that the climax is starting to build up around Keith as well. Because
he's sort of been at the centre of...
The linchpin. It's technically he's the main character. Well,
he's sort of the main guest character, definitely. And there's been a little bit of an arc with him and Mulder. And Mulder at one point is like, well, I've got to go back out there because I said I'd back him up, you know. And that, you know, that kind of... But this is it. There's something definitely in there, but it's that whole... And for once, this is one of those episodes where Mulder actually doesn't see it. Like, normally it's Scully on the other side of the door while all the mad stuff's going on with Mulder in there. But for once, Mulder's on the outside, which is quite rare.
National Cowboy up! Again, I wonder how much of that was... An improvisation.
Oh, it could be. Could be. It's hard to say with Duchovny.
Yep, he's alive.
Yeah, that's good because he's not. You wouldn't want him to die. Oh, that's not nice.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt in the morning.
Yeah.
The blank. Oh,
bleep, yeah.
Blank in blank.
Blankety blank. Sun came up. It only hunts at night when people are most afraid in the dark.
The question I'll get that, if like...
Maybe just went away till the next full moon, yeah. Go on.
Well, you've got all these unsolved X-Files and stuff, particularly with this. Obviously, the thing will probably crap.
All depends on how they edit it together.
I mean, it's going to be...
And there we go. All done.
Yeah.
Go on.
I think it depends. Like, you would have thought they would have come back to try and find it afterwards.
Well, you could say that about so many of the episodes, though, couldn't you? You could say that about so many X-Files. I mean...
First-person shooter.
That's the next one, yeah. That's another commentary to come. But no, you could say that.
That's like my sequel to Space. I've not missed. I fast-forwarded through the end of that.
Well, maybe you'll have to come on the episode to talk about that one and just see how that... But no, it is that idea that a lot of these cases end and there isn't a wrap-up. You know, they don't catch that monster. That monster could come back in a sequel episode. But then they wouldn't do a sequel episode to that because the idea's done. You know, the conceptual idea of that monster is out there. What would a sequel really, really do?
I mean, it's a job like to investigate, and if they investigate it, I mean, like, they know that something's there, and they know that someone's been attacked. They at least have to try and follow it up, or unless it's just the boring paperwork bit.
Well, I don't know if you remember, the season 7 finale, Requiem, kind of does play on this because they get audited. And one of the things the auditor asks is, well, you know, none of these cases kind of get solved. And Mulder's like, well, that's not quite the point. Yeah. It's like, and what they want is data. They want facts. They want conclusions. They want arrests. And how do you arrest anyone for that? Like, you know, that it's beyond the realms of arrest. And that's the thing with the X-Files. And that's why you get so many endings that are really unsolved, and that's the beauty of it. Some of the best episodes have endings that are like, oh my god, it's still out there. And they do come back to some, but then quite a lot they don't. And you just have that nice idea that there's an America out there that's just full of weird shit.
And like inept FBI agents that just can't be asked to solve weird shit.
Exactly, yeah. It's why they need Next Files Department, you see. Whole department.
I bet you if Einstein and Miller did it, they would have solved it straight away.
Don't even go there. Don't even go there, right? Because I'm going to have a revolt on my hands and Matt Laban will never be welcome on the X-Cast again. But no, that's X-Cop. So I hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about it as much as we've enjoyed watching it, actually.
Yeah.
That was good fun.
It's good. Thank you for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing a little commentary. So Just before we go, just give anyone a little bit of a shout out to what you're doing, where you are. You've got a podcast on We Made This, the podcast network as well.
Yes.
Let people know so they can check it out.
Yes, it's Pick a Disc, where I speak to guests about an album that they just want to talk about for whatever reason they want. Mm. They like it, they don't, they just find it interesting. So yeah, you can find us on pretty much most of the social medias under the name Pick a Disc. At Twitter, at Pick a Disc. Instagram, I'm quite active on that, at Pick a Disc. And yeah, and also on the We Made This website as well.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Check it out, guys. It's a good show about all kinds of music. So, yeah, thanks for listening to this commentary. We'll be back for another commentary soon. We've got a few more in the pipeline. And until next time, remember, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IamWillAye. Elsewhere on We Made This. Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
We are into our specials between Series 3 and Series 4, and I am your regular host, Mark. With me at this time, you're not Kurt.
What a shipwrecked and comatose. What's Red Dwarf? Who's Kurt?
Oh dear. Hello, Fraser.
Hello, Mark. How's it going?
So this is our very special, right in the childhood, shipwrecked and comatose crossover.
Woo, 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 woo. Crossing the streams. They tell you not to do that in Ghostbusters. But then that's what actually saves the day, so maybe we should cross the streams.
We are Starfleet.
A lot of times we have trouble facing profound grief and trauma in our past, so it is interesting. I think it was a, you know, this sort of well-intentioned you know, sort of benchmark for him to clear as,
sure,
as a developing being, and he unfortunately kind of had this arrested development because of the trauma that he experienced. And then, you know, if someone had shown up a year later, 2 years later, you know, maybe not so bad. But the burn happened, and that wasn't an option anymore.
Pick a Disc.
So yeah, I do think that concept of just like normal music getting associated with Christmas is much more of a British thing, which I find interesting. The Love Actually soundtrack, I mean, this might be entirely because of how much I like Love Actually and how much I associate it with Christmas, but definitely like Jump for My Love or even Too Lost in You, to be honest, because Sugar Babes weren't big in the US like whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I know them from this song, and I know this song from Love Actually, that I do think when I hear that, my head does kind of go to Christmas time. But I, again, like, I don't know if that's just more of me than normal people.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.